Today we'll turn a critical eye on dramatic art, on scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Mike Schultz is an actor and a reviewer. We'll find out how those two jobs mix. Along the way, Garrison Keillor reviews The Writer's Almanac on Scribble. How about that, Mike?
I love it. I've heard that before, I think.
Yeah, oh, really?
It's a great piece.
Well, you know, it's being an actor, and you are I'll say it. Boy, it just breaks my jaw. You're a fine actor, a really good actor. I say
you.
That as one
That's very
who
kind.
Just flails about at it. But you actually first came to general attention as a reviewer of plays. And then you kind of backed off that, haven't you?
I did. I did it full-time from 2005 to the end of 2009, and then thought I'd given it about as much as I could on a two-show-a-week schedule. and it was really missing being on stage. So I got to – that's when we had Tom White come aboard with the River City's Reader. And then Tom moved away a couple of years ago. Now we have a group of four reviewers who rotate the job, and I still get to do it every once in a while too, which is nice. I just reviewed one last weekend. I have another one I'll be reviewing, Circa 21's The Music Man, this weekend. So I still get to keep my feet wet in that area.
What criteria do you use in deciding that as an actor I can review this company or this play or so on?
Sure. Well, I don't review anything over at the QC Theater Workshop in Davenport only because I work there as an actor quite a bit. I do, however, review for, like I mentioned, Circa 21, even though I did work there for 11 years as one of the bootleggers over there. But I had been gone for numerous years by the time I started with them, and so it felt that enough time had passed. So basically, as long as I don't have a major conflict of interest with the company that I'm talking about, I feel it's okay. And so far, no one's complained. So, to my face,
yeah.
I should say. Okay. Behind my back, there might be a lot of complaining.
Does being an actor make it more difficult or easier in some ways to review plays?
I would almost say it at least allows for a little bit more generosity in terms of figuring out what people are going for, and maybe there are reasons that they're not if something isn't working tremendously well, there could easily be reasons for that. You could say, oh, that script doesn't work, that role doesn't really work, something about this it just isn't playing, and it's not necessarily the actor's fault. Sometimes it is the actor's fault. You can tell with that too sometimes. But it's all, you know, it's all just a guessing game at the end of the day. You're not at rehearsals. You don't know what feedback they're getting or not from a director or from other co-stars or how long it took them to learn lines, that kind of thing. So you just kind of go with your gut a lot of times.
Yeah, it's a good thing you're not there, I'll tell you.
Right. Exactly. I've heard that too.
Yeah, it can get pretty ugly.
Sure.
But do you view yourself, you know, how do you do that when you wear two different hats? What are you, a writer, a reviewer, an actor?
I would like to think that I'm a reviewer when I'm doing the reviewing, at least. I try to be – the thing is there is no such thing as objective criticism. It all comes from who you are and what your experience has been and what you know and what you don't, of course. And so I would like – but I would like to think that I see it from the point of view of an audience member who's being asked now, what were your thoughts about this? Thankfully, I've had a lot of training by a lot of really, really good people, most of them in this area, as far as figuring out what works maybe and what doesn't. And so it's hard to say. I guess my acting certainly helps, I think, in judging other acting, only because I know what I would like to do and what I would like to see in others. But at the end of the time, it really is a gut decision in many ways.
Let me reverse that question that I first asked.
Sure.
Does being a reviewer help you as an actor?
I know it certainly helped as far as when I got back into it in 2010, because I had spent 4 years seeing as many as 85 shows in a year and seeing some tremendous acting. And of course, I had worked at Circa for 11 years. I went to Augustana College as a theater major from 86 to 90. I've seen just tremendous, tremendous talent in this area, and we are lousy with talent in this area. It is incredible. And when you look at how many groups there are and how many actors there are to fill all these roles. So I would say absolutely reviewing, I hope, made me a better actor, because I would love to be able to do what some of these incredible people that have been watching for years get to do.
You know, it is true. We seem to be overflowing with talent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is it perhaps possible, because every person can act, as every person can sing?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Aristotle who talks about acting as a normal part of development.
Sure, sure.
You know, a kid watches his parents and learns how to act or how not to act.
Absolutely. That's I've got a great 2-year-old friend right now who, you know, likes playing, you know, playing restaurant, or likes playing I'll be the trick-or-treat guy at the door and you be the trick-or-treater. You know, you come up. So you do end up taking up roles from a very young age. Absolutely.
Were you ever an actor, Tweet?
I was the father in Our Hearts Were Young and Gay back as a junior in high school.
Oh, I remember. You mentioned that. Yes.
Anything since?
No.
Okay.
Well, teaching is acting.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, it is going on stage. And just like going on a real stage, you know within 3 minutes of a class whether this is going to be a long hour or this is in the groove.
Whether your performance is...
And I have no control over it. Yeah, it's a performance.
Sure, sure.
What do you look for when you... actually, you're reviewing movies.
Mm-hmm. I do both. I do a lot more movies than plays, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, how do you shift gears on that?
Oh, that one's a little bit easier for me. As far as the shifting gears goes, I shouldn't say – reviewing is difficult in general, whatever medium you're covering. Movies I can take as a big whole pretty easily. I can take from the beginning to the closing credits and let the entire experience kind of sink in. With theater, it's much more specified for me. It's every single performance is its own unique thing. Every single kind of stage motion or song in a musical, it becomes a lot of little puzzle pieces to try to put together in terms of what you want to write about. That's why I get in trouble with my theater reviews sometimes, because they get a little long, I've been told, because there's just so much to talk about. And if I see a movie that I'm not crazy about, I can deal with that one in 200 words if I need to. You couldn't pay me enough to write a 200-word theater review. I wouldn't know what to leave out. I wouldn't know what not to talk about. And there's also the idea, of course, that Adam Sandler isn't going to read anything I've written about a movie of his I don't like. You know, but if I do see a play, I do know that people I talk to on a daily basis are probably going to wind up reading that. So there's a little bit more personal responsibility, I guess, in wanting to do a good job on that. I hope I do a good job on whatever I write about, naturally. But you are very much aware that friends and neighbors are going to be reading things you wrote.
Well, what does that do to your judgment?
It just sharpens it, I guess. I think that's probably the best way to say that, and maybe adds a little bit to the generosity, for sure. I will be much... I truly try not to be vicious in writing theater reviews, because you're going to ruin someone's day, you know. Movies are a little bit easier that way in terms of if I just hate something, I can just say it.
What is the purpose of a review? I mean, is it to provide guidance for an audience? You'll like this or you won't?
Mm-hmm.
Is it to talk about the play itself or the movie itself and its structure, how it fits into other things? What is the purpose of a review?
Well, at the end of the day, I'm not sure how much of one there is. I guess it depends on what you as a reader want to take from it. for instance, if I have am planning to go out for the weekend and would love to see a play or a movie, I might easily pick up a review to see which one I should go see, or if I had one in mind, whether or not I should see it. If I am a theater participant, if I'm acting in a show, then I'm going to want to read that review to say, to see, am I doing a good job? Are we pulling this off? Is this working for other people? If it's a review about from an author who I particularly admired, if it's, you know, a Shakespeare, an O'Neill, or Williams, or something like that, I might want to read it to see where it, like you say, falls into the oeuvre of the artist. So I think it has different purposes, and you can take from it what you want as a reader.
But you must have some sense of an audience. The River City Reader is not just another newspaper, right?
Thank you, I think. Yes,
well,
it is.
I mean,
so too.
You know, you are more cutting edge, and I don't know if you're encouraged to be or whether writers just feel more comfortable, but River City Reader can certainly be more cutting edge than
certainly
most newspapers in town can be.
And I think so that comes down to
who
they
reads
hire.
The River City Reader. I mean, what kind of an audience?
It's interesting. It's a really wide swath. It's a very large demographic. I have gotten letters from high schoolers who read them for the movie reviews, who just like my work there. Yeah. But I also have heard from people in their 70s and 80s who read it. I think it just comes down to if you want something – I would like to – if you want something a little bit maybe more in-depth than you might get elsewhere, you pick it up. Maybe if you want something a little bit more cutting. And then there are, you know, people who just want to see if a movie's worth seeing and pick it up for that. Yeah, it covers a lot of bases.
Suppose someone is rash enough to do a tragedy by Racine. I don't know how familiar you might be with Racine.
Not great, not since college, for sure. Not since Dorothy Parkhander and Augustana.
When you look at the range of performance from opera, musical comedy, to review, to classic theater, to what you might call American Golden Age theater, to contemporary theater, experimental theater. How do you adjust for all that?
Oh, I'm not sure. I guess I just take it. I just take it as it comes. To be honest, I don't do a lot of preparatory work. No matter what I'm doing, if it's, I do get nervous about classical theater sometimes, only because I wasn't terribly well versed in it. For a long time, until I started reviewing and seeing shows at Genesius Guild, for instance. And so I would do at least a scan of the plot so I wouldn't feel completely in the woods if it came to that. But beyond that, I really do like sitting down and not knowing a whit about what I'm about to see. I think that's fun. I think that's really exciting. And I'm not a firm – I don't love reviews that get too much into plot and too much into exposition. I tend, when I write about anything, theater or movies, I try to keep the plot synopsis as brief as humanly possible, two, three sentences, and I say, let the rest of it just happen to you. I think that's pretty fun. I'll do research afterwards, for instance, if it's a playwright I know I should know more of and see what else I've been missing from him or her. But no, I like going in blind. I think that's kind of fun.
Do you take notes as you watch a play, or do you think that interferes with?
I think it interferes. The reason I don't, for the most part, is because I know what it feels like as an actor to be sitting there and seeing somebody with a big notebook in the front row, and you're like,
right.
"I'm acting up here, please, you know, pay attention to
right.
me." The only place I do actually take notes occasionally is at Circa 21, because you're far enough from the actors and you have tables, so you can write in your notepad underneath the table and nobody will ever notice. Aside from that, no. I've got a pretty good memory for theater productions as far as retaining it for the next day's writing. Movies, I bring a miniature recorder actually with me, and I'll whisper things in that sometimes because that's almost too much information for me for 2 hours to remember bon mots.
Do you usually attend the first performance so that you can get a review in for other people that might want to come to it?
Actually, we kind of let all shows, unless it's a one-weekend run, we let all shows go for a full weekend without send without getting a review out there at all.
Okay.
So we'll put one out the Monday after the first weekend because I'm a firm believer that everybody should get one weekend to enjoy the experience and learn from the experience and not worry about what somebody's going to say after your opening night when everybody's excited and you just had the cast party and you're feeling great. I don't want anyone to have to read anything on Saturday that might ruin the mood of that. So we tend to come out with our reviews either the Monday or the Tuesday following. Personally, I like seeing opening night because I like opening night excitement and nerves from actors, especially on stage. It does bring a certain electricity to the show that you don't necessarily get once everyone's feeling a little bit more comfortable. I like seeing people have fun. And opening night audiences are fun, too.
Well,
they really
panic is palpable, isn't it?
Yeah, in a great way, though, sometimes. Right. It can be really exciting. And every theater person will tell you, of course, you know, the couple days before you open, you always have that one crummy rehearsal that just where you're like, this is never going to come together by Friday. And it almost invariably always does. And that's fun to see, too, seeing the smiles at curtain call when actors go, oh, we made it. We pulled it off. Yeah, you have no idea what we went through 2 days ago.
if it's obvious to you that it's a bad night, do you ever go back and try to look at it again?
I have in the past. One show in particular I actually saw three times was Cats at Circa 21. The first time I saw it, I was stuck in I hate Cats mode. It just end of story. I don't care for that show. I don't enjoy it. I got enough blowback on that review that I realized later I was like, that was unfair. It was pretty much 600 words of I hate cats and a couple of hundred on the actual production. So I went back to see it about 3 weeks later, and then I saw it again on closing week because I'd had such a good time 3 weeks later. I was like, I bet this is really good by closing night. So I will every once in a while. The problem is you just run out of time finally, you know. Yeah.
Do you ever write a piece to educate that, you know, that this play was done, but, you know, that's not typical of this author or this was approached the wrong way? Do you come in with a set of principles about plays?
I have every once in a while. It depends if I'm really, really versant in the piece itself. If it's a play that I know terribly well and I know this is not – that audiences are not getting what this is supposed to be, I have mentioned that in the past. It doesn't happen terribly often. If anything, I'll toss that off as an aside in the review and say, usually it's done like this, but this one is done like this, and then focus on the specific production because that's really what's germane.
Well, Mike Schultz, we'll wait for your review of this broadcast.
Oh, my gosh. I can't. Okay. Who's that guy with that shrill voice that I couldn't listen to for a half hour?
Whoa. We'll leave it to your judgment. And right now, we're going to leave the Writer's Almanac to Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. And now let's rummage around in the book bag, and I see Roald has his hand in there already.
Well, I do, and I want to report on a book that I probably would never have read had Don Erickson not given it to me for Christmas, and I trust him, so I started to read it. It's a book by an author named Tim Burkhead, who's a scientist, and it's called The Most Perfect Thing. And what is the most perfect thing? The subtitle tells it all, Inside and Outside a Bird's Egg. It is 400 pages of detailed information about eggs. Now, what amazed me is, although we've been studying eggs for 300-400 years, seriously, I mean, there have been egg scientists that long, we don't know many things. We don't know, for instance, why eggs are colored the way they are, particularly the ones that are speckled or spotted. We think we know maybe it was for this, maybe it was for camouflage. Turns out not to be right. We know how birds are colored. The egg, as it goes through the bird system, goes through a little section of the passageway where there is essentially, almost literally, an inkjet printer. And as the egg turns, the inkjet puts the pattern on the gland. But we have so there are many, many variations. But nobody still has any idea why the egg is colored the way it is and why it's so varied and speckled and different in different birds. Okay. We don't know why the egg is shaped the way it is, with narrow at one end and you know, people thought it's so that if an egg rolls around, it'll roll in a circle and not off the nest. Turns out not to be true. We think it maybe was easier for the bird to give birth to the egg if the narrow end goes first. But it turns out that the narrow end is first all the way through the bird's system until just centimeters before it emerges, and then it does a 180 degrees turn and comes out the thick end. Why? Nobody knows. And it happens in every bird.
Think about how they find out these things,
though. We don't. Well, how would you find it? And we know that some birds are born ready to go. Chickens, pheasants, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, within 3 or 4 minutes, they're dried off, up and running and eating, eyes open. Many birds, however, need to be fed for a couple of weeks. They're blind at birth, totally helpless. We have no idea why that is. But it's even more fascinating what we already know. For instance, an egg shell, and half the book is about eggshells, the eggshell has to have porous elements in order to bring oxygen into the embryo. Mm-hmm. That same eggshell has to be impervious to microbes and germs in a nest that often gets dirty. How does that happen? And we do know how that happens, and it is a fascinating, fascinating story. We know that the shell has to be hard enough to resist breaking as the bird moves it around the nest and comes in for a landing, but it has to be breakable enough for a baby bird who is almost helpless to poke it out with its beak. It is an awesome story. There's a whole section on egg collections. People will pay thousands of dollars for a particular coloration in a seabird's egg, or have in the past, and I think still do. And it turns out, I was talking to Bill Hannon, whose first job was as a curator at the Putnam Museum when it was over on Brady Street in that old abandoned church. And he said one of the big collections that originally came from the former founders of the Putnam, the Davenport Academy of Sciences, there is a huge collection of eggs at the Putnam Museum and of bird skins, not stuffed birds, bird skins for study. Hmm. So what is the mystique about bird collecting? People have to have, it's like coins, it's like matchbooks.
Yeah.
You know, a particular variation that only occurs once every 1,000 times can cost hundreds of dollars.
Give us the name and author of this once
Tim more. Burkhead, and it's called The Most Perfect Thing.
The Most Perfect Thing, and in his estimation, that is definitely an egg, huh?
It's an egg. I'm convinced.
Well, I like mine poached. That's it for now. We'll see you next week on the next edition of Scribble.